Welcome back, Baseball America Hot Sheet Show. I'm Jacob Rudner, joined by JJ Cooper, Ian Kundle, and Jeff Ponce. The trade deadline is behind us, and man, do we have a lot to talk about. But before we do it, I got to remind you, head on over to baseballamerica.com to see all of our written content. There's so much of it, analyzing everything that went down on the trade deadline. Also, if you've got questions for us, throw them on in the chat. We're going to answer them during the show. But first, let's hit the first move. Yes, indeed. Trade deadline is done. No top 25 prospects traded, but five from our top 100, excuse me, two inside the top 50. There they are. Anthony Ianson, Arjun Namala, Zaire Hope, Kaysen Witherspoon, and Jefferson Rojas. JJ, about typical for a trade deadline to see that many top prospects go on the move?
No, we've had recent years where no top 100 prospects are traded. I would describe this as one of the busiest trade deadlines we've seen in years. We had more top 100 prospects traded in 2022, but really you could call that the Juan Soto rule. If you took Juan Soto trade out of that, there would have been fewer. So you really could say that this is one of, without doubt, this is one of the busiest of the 2020s. And I would add to that also, you said five top 100 prospects. There's another five who aren't that far off of the list you could make arguments for as well. So you really did see, I would say, 10 premium prospects and then a whole lot. I think we ended up ranking 85 in total, but a whole lot of other prospects. But 10 premium prospects traded at the deadline is a very large number.
What were some of the trade deadline moves that we liked? Ian, I'll start with you. What stood out?
I think the one that obviously stood out the most was the Orioles. They made the biggest deal of the deadline, trading Adley Rutschman to the Red Sox for a very substantial prospect haul. I think that, you know, when you look at what they got back, and I'll extend it to the Michael Ferrett for Tyler Wells deal, they really emphasize pitching. I mean, you look at the deal with the Red Sox, Anthony Ianson, Kaysen Witherspoon, you know, that's two high-end draft picks from last year. Michael Fretz, another guy who's kind of been on the periphery of the top 100, kind of in that 100 to 125, 150 range all season, and has taken a step forward with the Rays. So, you know, they added a lot of talent. And then Andy Azakar, of course, is the big position player. But it's beyond that. You know, they added Yomnardo Reyes from the Twins. I think just the Orioles as a whole were one of the clear winners of the deadline. Yes, they gave up a lot of talent, but they also brought a lot back and a much needed boost to their system, which I think was lacking some depth. So I would say they were one of the biggest winners for me.
Jeff, who's up to you?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go here with the Cardinals. Now, I know, you know, they didn't swing, we'll say, as big a deals, but I would say they had less to sell, just in terms of it's a very young core that's maybe experienced a little bit more success. They have one of the deeper farm systems in the game after, you know, a very busy trade deadline last year. I think a pretty good draft class based on all counts and measures. And then they went out and I think swung one of the more surprising deals in that Dustin May deal to be able to bring back a potentially breakout prospect that I'm not sure we in the public space have necessarily fully adjusted to in Josiah Ragsdale. And then Alexander Frias, who I think is probably one of the more exciting low-level prospects. And when we look at some of these prospect for major leaguer trades, funny enough, it feels like, you know, maybe the percentages of it working out are lower, but the percentages of like hitting on a really, really high-end player are much higher. That's not just in terms of the deadline, but I just think historically we've seen, you know, guys like Fernando Tatis Jr., of course, Jordan Alvarez were guys that, you know, moved for major leaguers while they were complex players. Even Zaire Hope, who eventually turned into a player that the Dodgers were able to use as a headliner to land the best player on the market in Tarek Skubal. So I think some of what the Cardinals did was interesting, though it might not be on as big of a scale as maybe the Orioles or the Angels, who I think are another team that did pretty well at this deadline.
Let's talk about those Angels for a second. This was kind of an atypical deadline relative to what's gone on for about the past decade, if not more than that, for that franchise. JJ, the Angels deadline, positive, negative? You wrote a great piece over at Baseball America just on your thoughts. Why don't you explain some of that here?
I'm going to have to say positive because I wrote that at baseballamerica.com. And the reason I say positive is that this is what the Angels have been unwilling to do. I'm not saying they've never made a trade at the deadline. We highlighted they did the Logan Ohapi trade a few years ago, which worked out okay, but obviously not as well as they hoped. They did the Samuel Aldegheri and George Clausen deal a couple years after that. So they have made moves, but we saw them make more moves, kind of more willingness to accept that if you've had a losing record for every year of the past decade, you're probably not one move, one acquisition away from being a playoff team. And that's been something they've been unwilling to do year after year after year. And these moves, I don't think that this is going to utterly transform the farm system or something, but Arjun Namala is the best guy that any, you could argue him and Ianson are the two highest ranked prospects who were traded. It's as good as anyone who went at the deadline. That's a huge and key piece for the Angels to add. But I would say beyond that, even with some of the lesser ranked prospects they added, this is a team that needs more depth. I do think this farm system is better than it's been in past years. I think that their new approach of being a little slower about pushing their prospects up the ladder to the majors is a wise one, but overall, the willingness to accept that holding on to some of these guys who even have a couple of years left isn't going to be the difference between winning 73 games next year and winning 85 is probably key for them actually getting to that next team that can win 85 to 90 or more.
And the Angels weren't the only selling team that took advantage of yesterday's market. The Giants also, three trades, landed a number of standout prospects. Ian, what did you think of their day?
Yeah, I thought the Giants were one of the big winners too. And I think the thing that really stood out to me was the amount of arm talent they added. You look what they targeted. It's high velo, big stuff pitchers that you can dream on having ceilings. And I think that kind of applies to the position players too. But you look at the top, Roman Marquez, I think he's someone who's really popped this year with the Phillies. He's got one of the best changeups in minor league baseball. Three pitch mix, like there's a chance for a mid-rotation starter there. Henry Lalanne, who was once seen as a really high-end pitching prospect with the Yankees, had a couple of years battling injuries, has come back in a big way this year. I know Josh Norris over Baseball America, our colleague, saw him throw his best start of the season, and he's been excellent this year. But even going further, you look at some of the guys that are maybe not in the the top 100 periphery. Someone like Miguel Mendez throws really hard, big stuff. And then Johniel Hernandez is kind of the sleeper for me. He was one of the Padres' big international signings last year out of Cuba, got, I think, around $1.4 million. And he's been one of the standout players in the DSL this season. I think he's going to rank very highly when we do our DSL rankings. And talking to a scout down there, thought he was one of the better players that they saw. Like, this is a guy who's a really good athlete. He's got a potential to hit. He's got power. This is the kind of swing you should be taking for the Giants. And just adds another really impressive middle infielder to their staple of young middle infielders in the low minors right now.
Let's talk about teams that maybe didn't have impressive days. Jeff, I'll go to you first. Who stood out maybe for what they didn't do or just maybe didn't take advantage of the opportunity to sell the way they should have?
Yeah, I think the biggest criticism probably has to go to Atlanta. I know that our former colleague, Jesus Cano, kind of asked the direct question to Alex Anthopoulos yesterday. But I think when you look at the position that this team is in right now, when you're facing, a colossus like the Dodgers and, maybe have an opportunity to, potentially buy some players, you don't have the same restrictions that the Milwaukee Brewers do in terms of the type of aggressive moves you can make. I mean, we've seen the Braves probably be arguably the second most aggressive team over the last 5 to 10 years in terms of trading their prospects for proven big league talent outside of the Dodgers. And it felt as if it was a missed opportunity because the system is in a much better state than it had been in previous years. I think there's still a lot of talent in this system, even outside of Eric Hartman, if he was kind of within that untouchable window for them in certain deals. It does feel like other teams around them within the National League in particular did a good job of kind of fortifying their pitching staff. And, if you're a Braves fan, you're kind of left here looking at a rotation that has, pretty significant question marks heading into the stretch run here and potentially into the postseason as, they're one of the top teams in the National League.
So I'm not going to really offer a defense of the Braves, but I did kind of, when I was looking at it, one thing that did stand out to me, that the Braves are in a little bit of a different situation than some of the other teams here, right? Which is, I do think the Braves are one of the few teams who can say right now, they're going to the postseason. I know that the team has not been as good recently. They do have some guys coming back off of, you know, the IL and all that, but they have enough of a lead that you can say that this is a team that, I'll tell you right now, if they don't make the postseason, yeah, there's going to be a lot of hot seats there because this is the team that is positioned to make the postseason. So the moves you make are going to be much more about how do they up your chances of winning in the postseason. Obviously, this rotation has had a number of injuries, needs help. I think the list of pitchers, the list of starting pitchers who are clearly going to be useful front of the rotation starters in the postseason that the Braves were shopping in that aisle was pretty small. Now, there were some guys moved. I think that clearly there's reporting that they were trying to get Jacob DeGrom, and Jacob DeGrom said, nope, I'm not going anywhere. After that, you could say Casey Mize, you could say Soriano. Maybe you throw Robbie Ray in there. Maybe you throw Foster Griffin there, the less of the profile of what the guy you want in the postseason rotation, you know, softer toss, softer velo. They didn't get any of those guys. And I think that that's something that is a very fair criticism. They clearly didn't want to pay the price to say like Mize got, which would be a, you know, a reasonably pricey price of prospects. But I do think that part of the problem here for the Braves is a lot of the guys who moved elsewhere were guys who will help teams make the postseason, but they're not that number two, number three starter that they're looking for to kind of go right behind Chris Sale. They probably still should have made a move, but I do think that complicated the picture a little bit for them.
We have to talk about the big news of the weekend. That's the Dodgers acquiring Tarik Skubal. I think that that goes down as the move of the year. They send back a package that includes top 100 prospects, Zaire Hope. I think that the public had quite a bit of scrutiny for the trade and to be expected when it comes to the Dodgers. But JJ, is it as bad as some are making it out to be? Did the Tigers really do so poorly?
We studied this at Baseball America. We looked at every trade of an ace being traded at the deadline in a rental, and this fit right within the parameters. You usually see one top 25 to 75 prospect. They got that. Zaire Hope was, you know, kind of a, the third, you know, is kind of a guy who fits in that top 50 range. Then you get one guy who's kind of on the fringe of the 100. That was River Ryan. I think River Ryan very much fits that. And then you get one other guy who's, or two other guys kind of, who are much more the back end of the system. And that was Brady Smith. We think that Brady Smith is very interesting, but at the same time, I would say with Brady Smith, that's a guy who, you know, is coming off of, you know, this year is a first year back prep pick, who's first year back really from an arm injury. And, you know, there's a lot of risk there, obviously, but I would just say, like, if you line up the past trades, the CC Sabathia trade, the David Price trade in 2015, you could go down the list of those. There aren't that many of those trades, but if you do, these are the general parameters of what you get. The cost of acquiring a rental, even a great pitcher as a rental, is often less than like we saw. Again, that's still a better package than the Soriano deal, but I would say that the Jose Soriano trade, the Blue Jays, just illustrates the difference between how much more you get if you are getting a pitcher with multiple years of team control remaining.
Jeff, the biggest position player moved at the deadline, Orioles catcher Adley Rutschman. He goes to the Red Sox for four prospects, including Anthony Ianson, out of the top 100. Did the Red Sox give up too much? Was it a fair return? What did you think?
Yeah, you know, I think it all depends on, you know, does Adley Rutschman come back healthy? Do we have a full season of baseball next year? I'm hopeful in that regard, but and, you know, is there a possibility that an extension could get done with Rutschman? I think a lot of it kind of hinges on that. That being said, I thought some of the more extreme reactions to this trade that we saw yesterday, there was one quote from a scout or a rival front office person that thought it was an absurd overpay. I thought that was a little bit over the top. I think when you look at the fact that it's two pitching prospects, it's a very interesting, talented, you know, A-ball outfielder who doesn't project as like an elite outfielder. There's some hit tool questions there. There's a bunch of power. There's a lot. I mean, I like Andy Ezokar as a prospect, but I think you also look at Anthony Ianson. This video that we're, you know, you guys have up on the screen right now, he was sitting, what, 96 to 99 miles an hour that day. For me and Ian, we were down in Florida. He has not approached that velocity since. It has continued to go down. Now, he's continued to be one of the most effective pitchers in the minor leagues this year. But, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, the context of Lance's quote wasn't that either of these guys were injured, but perhaps we're higher on Ianson than maybe a lot of different organizations are out there. There's obviously a wide range of opinion. I think the other part of it is Kyson Witherspoon is a guy that was divisive last year coming into the draft with certain analysts and front office people that didn't think that there was a lot of potential improvements that you could make here. I think some of that narrative has kind of been proven true. He tried to add that sweeper. There were some question marks about how that impacted the rest of the arsenal. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that maybe scares off some teams in terms of what can we really do with this guy. And, you know, it's a player to be named later than the player they're replacing. So you have to take a big swing. I think this was a team that's in the mix. They have people here in Massachusetts that believe in this team a lot more than they have in for 8 years, probably, where they've been almost irrelevant at points in time. I think they're back into relevancy and they had to swing a big move. We heard the type of names that they were trying to call on. This is the biggest deal they could make. And I think in the long run, they did upgrade a position. So I don't know if it's as bad as maybe some people are making it out to be, but, you know, time will sort of tell on whether that's true or not.
Time will certainly tell. Time will also tell what we think about the Yankees. We're going to talk about them right after this quick break.
This is that time of year, AJ. It is baseball's time to shine. And it is SeatGeek's time to shine with MLB tickets and finding the best pricing, seating, and games that are even sold out available on SeatGeek.
Absolutely. If you want to go to the biggest matchups coming up, we have Yankees-Cubs coming up. There's Yankees-Red Sox. It means stuff again. There's some big moments that are coming up here in the as the pennant chases really heat up. Go to SeatGeek and find those green tickets with the best deals and get yourself out to an MLB game.
Yeah, and they're straightforward with you. They will actually put a red dot next to a ticket that they don't feel is your best look. Green dot means very good code for you. It's Territory 10. 10% off your next set of MLB tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off MLB tickets when you use the promo code Territory10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later.
The New York Yankees have made the call to the farm. They are calling up top prospect Jacob Lombard. He is going to make his major league debut. JJ, that's a pretty big deal. What do you think about that? And kind of ties into the deadline.
Yeah. I know there was a lot of feedback, a lot of people asking, you know, so the Yankees didn't make a move to fix their infield. Well, they did. They just waited. It wasn't a trade. They brought up George Lombard Jr. And I would say with Lombard, the key thing here is whatever offensive impact you get from him this year, I feel like is kind of bonus. The key thing that George Lombard is being brought up to do is to give them very solid defense, get on base, and not basically kill them at the plate. And that probably right there is the bar that he just needs to exceed. He may do better than that. Like, this is a guy who has always been impressive for, we've heard about his defense, but we've also heard that he really is a guy who has a solid feel for the game, does a lot of things well. I think that this is the move that kind of does solidify them at shortstop. He is a rookie. There's obviously a lot of variance there. The other part of this, though, is it's that we've kind of saw the example in the other way, though. We saw Anthony Volpe go down. We saw Jason Dominguez go down with the acquisition of Elliot Ramos. This is also a Yankees team that kind of has held on to some of these younger guys who haven't really established themselves, or in Volpe's case, have taken a step back. We didn't see any of those moved at the deadline. That maybe does surprise me a little bit because their value is probably diminishing by the day. Obviously, they can move Anthony Volpe in the offseason, or a Jason Dominguez or a Spencer Jones, but especially in the case of right now, Dominguez and Volpe, they don't seem like that those guys are key parts of their plans. And the longer you hold on to them, the less value they have.
You got draft on the brain. I said Jacob Lombard. So you don't hire the amateur guy to host it. George Lombard. Going to the Yankees. But Ian, why don't you tell us about what the Yankees are actually getting in Mr. George Lombard?
Yeah, I mean, they're getting, as JJ kind of alluded to, they're getting a very good glove. And I think that's the biggest upgrade. You know, you look at what Anthony Volpe has been doing at shortstop, and there's been some pretty high profile defense of miscues. And I think that's something they're going to eliminate with Lombard. He's very sure-handed. It's a definite shortstop profile. So adding him defensively is already an upgrade. And I think offensively, Lombard has had this track record as he's gone through the minors where he gets off to a really, really good start and then hits some struggles. And so we'll see how that kind of translates against obviously the best pitching possible. But he's been on fire as of late. In July, he hit 370, 517 with a 630 slug. He only had 60 plate appearances. It's coming back from an injury, but he took his lumps at the beginning when he got to AAA, but he's really adjusted to the level well, and is hitting has been hitting kind of for the last, even prior to the injury too. So I think that that he's someone who, given they were getting very little offensively, I think that he'll give them a slight upgrade there. But defense is really where the big upgrade will come. And you look at the context of the trade deadline, there weren't middle infielders moved. There were not catchers moved. Like the Yankees, obviously they were looking to upgrade the infield, but positions they wanted to, none of those guys ended up getting traded. So I think going internal for Lombard was the best possible outcome for them.
All right. We see your questions. They are piling up in the comments, and this is the last reminder. Do it. Put your comments in there. We want to answer your questions. It's exactly what we're going to do after this quick break.
It's the summertime, AJ, and this is a time to feel free, wild, make some phone calls that you're overdue for, and also get some deals that you should be getting, that you deserve.
Yeah, it couldn't be any easier, though. It's just one price for unlimited talk, text, and data. It's really simple. It is one price for all the data and all the phone calls you could want per month. It's simple.
That's right. All of Mint Mobile's plans are $15 a month with the summer sale, even unlimited. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/territory. That's mintmobile.com/territory to cut your wireless bill to $15 a month. That's it. There's no catch. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for 12 months. Plan required, $15 per month equivalent. Taxes and fees extra. Initial plan term only. Greater than 50 gigabytes may slow when network is busy. Includes up to 20 gigabytes hotspot. Capable device required. Availability, speed, and coverage varies. See mintmobile.com.
My favorite part of the show. We are answering your questions. If you want to ask, drop them in the comments. We will put them up on the screen. Clint, let's get it rolling. First question coming to you. There you go. From Ben Fullenkamp. How do I have hope as a Reds fan today? We have a terrific core group of players, but then an absolute mess around them and a front office that no one trusts or believes in. JJ, that's for you.
At first, I when I look at it, I think that what this kind of says is the Reds didn't want to rebuild. You could argue that they could still trade a Stevenson, trade a Singer, but it does feel like that they really do want to add to what they have already with some other pieces around it. You could say that that's not the right plan. They've tried that for a couple of years. I get your point on that. But as you kind of said yourself, the Ellie De La Cruzes, the Sal Stewarts, the Hunter Greens, the Nick Lodolos, the Andrew Abbotts, this is a team that does have a lot of nice pieces. Their real problem, something that they have not been able to solve, is to figure out kind of those shoulder pieces around them. They've failed to do that. And if they can fix the outfield, if they can fix a couple of other positions, they've had the rotation, they have the stars, they need to find the other pieces to go with it.
JJ, we are going to go right back to you with this next one from Amit Cat. Tinstap.
Okay. This one will get me on my little high horse here a little bit. And I do want Jeff's thoughts because Jeff may give a little bit more measured response than me. So Tinstap, if you don't know, is there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. And I will point out, the thing I would like to point out today is okay, so who were the pitchers traded at the deadline? The big league pitchers traded at the deadline who garnered large returns. We're talking about Tarek Skubal, right? Well, Tarek Skubal was a pitching prospect. He was in a top 25, I believe, in the top 100. And then you say, okay, well, who else? Well, Robbie Ray. Robbie Ray was a top 10 prospect in the system. I don't know if he was ever in the top 100. But Kevin Gausman. Kevin Gausman was an elite top of the top 100 prospect when he was traded. What other starters were traded? Like, pretty much, if you look at the starters, Casey Mize. Casey Mize wasn't as highly rated by us as Tarek Skubal, but he was, came up same time, and he was also a premium top 100 pitching prospect. The starters who garnered return were guys who were such a thing as a pitching prospect at one time. Yes, the risk with the pitching prospect is higher than the risk with position player, but the guys who end up being the best pitchers in the game generally their top 100 pitching prospects. Look right now, Jacob Mizorowski, look at Paul Skenes. I'll give you Christopher Sanchez. He was a prospect, but not an elite one coming up. He's a good development story. But Jeff, is there such a thing as a pitching prospect?
Yeah, I think, you know, especially if you look at recent years, it there kind of has to be. Now, that doesn't necessarily, you know, exclude maybe what the expression generally was trying to point to, which is a ton of actual development as a pitcher, as a starter, doesn't necessarily happen in the minor leagues. It happens in the majors. It happens when you're facing the best hitters in the world, the best lineups that I've said this a million times, but you can't replicate facing a 1-9 major league lineup. Even a bad one is probably better than the best lineup you've ever faced in your life. So I just think there's a certain level of growth that has to happen at the major league level that, you know, maybe skews the idea of a pitching prospect, but the most valuable pitcher in the game right now is Jacob Mizorowski. Certainly Chris Sale, who's had a long career, was a pitching prospect. Dylan Cease, who's one of the most valuable starters in the game, was a pitching prospect. Jesus Luzardo, Paul Skenes, these were all guys that ranked on top 100 lists. Chase Burns, more or less, was a pitching prospect in college and barely pitched in the minors, kind of like Skenes, and went up to the big leagues and, you know, is one of the most valuable pitchers probably in any organization right now if trades were made. The return for Chase Burns with his number of years of control and value and his projection, I think, would be astronomical. So I think it's wrong to say that there's no such thing as a pitching prospect, but I do think there's maybe some truth within the statement, but it's really more, there's a lot of growth and development that has to happen at the major league level. Is that measured?
All right, enough? Got time for maybe got time for a couple more here from Don Shally. Don, thanks for watching. It was also on our live show yesterday. Which team gained the most as a seller in these trades from the deadline, Ian?
I mean, I think the Orioles would have to be the clear answer. They were the only team to add multiple top 100 prospects. And you look at the guys they added in the next year, Andy Alzekar, for example, someone I could see making a top 100 list in the future. But if I had to pick the biggest winner given on what they traded, I think I would go with the Giants. I think just the quality and the upside of the arms they added, Hernandez, who we talked a little bit about earlier, and even someone like Marcelo Meyer. I know he's not a prospect anymore, but I think he's a prime change of scenery candidate, someone who needed to get away from Boston, you know, get him out back on the West Coast where he's from, kind of a different environment, some different, you know, coaching and infrastructure. I think that will be very beneficial to him. And he'll get, I think, plenty of runway there when he's back healthy, given they traded Luis Arraez. So there's a hole at second base, which he can fill. So I think that the Giants, to me, were one of the big winners at the deadline.
That is going to do it then for this week's Hot Sheet Show. We thank you for watching. And of course, if you are a fan of all the things that we're talking about here, you will certainly be a fan of the things that we're writing about over at baseballamerica.com. Highly encourage you to subscribe over there and on YouTube. We've got lots of content as well. But for JJ, for Jeff, for Ian, I'm Jacob Rudner.